Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of this here long-standing electronic engineering podcast called Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com and hosted by yours truly, Amelia Dalton. Andrew McAfee, co-director of the MIT Initiative on the Digital Economy, once said, "The world is one big data problem." And in this week's Fish Fry, we're taking Mr. McAfee's words to heart. We're investigating Intel's Optane persistent memory and how this new innovative memory technology can deliver a unique combination of affordable large capacity and support for data persistence. And we're also taking a closer look at some brand new technology developed at North Carolina State University that is changing the future of DNA storage. All right, so let's start with that last one first, because you know I love me some DNA technology. So, did you know that 1 gram of DNA can hold up to 215 million gigabytes of data? Yeah. How many USB sticks is that? Let's see. Okay. So it was just released this week that researchers from North Carolina State University have developed a brand new way to store DNA. And not only that, with this new technology, they are also making it so that further DNA research can be done with these stored DNA files without destroying them. Yeah. Definitely a good thing, right? So, how do we store DNA now? Well, current DNA storage systems use what is called polymerase chain reaction, or PCR, to access stored DNA files. While PCR is really great at copying information, it's also quite problematic. In order for PCR to work correctly, it must raise and lower the temp of the stored DNA files pretty drastically in order to pull apart the double strands of the DNA to reveal the primer binding sequences. Those are pretty important. But the result of this process isn't pretty. All of those sequences, those primer binding sequences and the data storage sequences, end up swimming around, free as a bird, in this kind of genetic soup. So with current technologies, that soup is then sorted to find and then copy the relevant DNA using PCR. And not only that, using PCR too many times, well, it starts to consume the original DNA file. Yeah, that's not great. Okay, so enter Doris to save the day. Or the DNA, as the case may be. DORIS actually stands for Dynamic Operations and Reusable Information Storage. So, DORIS goes about this process in a completely different way. Instead of starting with the double-stranded DNA, it actually uses the DNA overhang, which is a single strand of DNA that streams behind the double-stranded DNA that stores the data. So with DORIS, there is no need to mess with temperature, rip apart the strands, none of that. Using these single-stranded overhang DNA means that this technology can find the right sequences without disturbing the original DNA strands. Not only is DORIS going to make the investigation of these DNA strands easier, it's also going to drastically increase the amount of density in the system itself. Because now DORIS can easily identify the differences between primer binding sequences and data storage sequences. And DORIS even takes away that copying sequence business that PCR has to deal with. So once DORIS has said, yes, this is the correct sequence, it doesn't copy anything. It actually transcribes the DNA in question to RNA. And then that RNA is reverse transcribed back to DNA in order for the data storage system to read it. Sounds a bit complicated, but basically it means that DORIS will never consume slash destroy the original file in order to read it. So, if you want even further information about this super cool new DNA storage technology, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's fish frying page on eejournal.com, including a white paper called Dynamic and Scalable DNA-Based Information Storage. Cool. And now it's time for persistent memory. What is it? Why do I want to use it? And what do street tacos have to do with this new breakthrough memory optimized for data-centric workloads? Well, you'll just have to keep listening to find out. Please welcome Christy Mann from Intel to Fish Fry, everyone. Hi, Christy. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Amelia. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, so we're here today to talk about persistent memory. So first off, what exactly is persistent memory?
That's a great question. Persistent memory is a new technology developed by Intel that's a little bit like memory and a little bit like storage, but also unlike either of them. It's like memory in that it's a memory DIMM form factor, it sits on the DDR bus, and it's fully byte addressable, just like DRAM. But it's unique because the base media used to build it is fully byte addressable. It's immediately non-volatile without the traditional pain points of storage, like garbage collection, write amplification, and the latency of travel over the PCIe bus. So when you combine the media, the form factor, that addressability, and the persistence all together on the memory bus, you have a new option for traditional memory and storage functionality right in the compute block. This provides exceptional performance, more memory capacity, and amazing new possibilities.
So, Christy, what exactly does persistent memory buy me as an engineer?
That's a great question, and little known fact about me, I'm actually an engineer myself, so I know a little bit about this. As it turns out, engineers are innovators, first and foremost. And for more than 50 years, our hardware and software engineers have had to make tough trade-offs between the high performance but high cost of memory, or the capacity and low cost of storage. There was almost a rule that you had to minimize your memory usage. But persistent memory opens up a whole new world to our creators, where they have a new tool in their toolbox to eliminate these painful trade-offs. It allows them to match the right tool to the right workload. I recently talked to a software architect at one of the leading financial trading firms last month, and he made my year. He said that it's opening his mind to being able to place new data in this new tier to make actionable, real-time fraud detection possible for the first time ever. It's making the impossible possible. I loved that quote, Amelia. And that was when I knew we were allowing our engineers and architects to truly innovate.
I can definitely see how this kind of memory technology can make actionable insights more approachable. Do you have any examples of this in the field, and how are you seeing people use it?
Well, this is probably one of the most enjoyable parts of my job, I'm not going to lie. We've been out in the market for just over a year, and every day I hear about a new customer use case or an application for this technology. We're really starting to gain traction. We now have POCs or deployments at more than 200 of the 500 Fortune 500 companies, and we're working on projects with five of the Super 7 CSPs. We're working across services, projects, financial services, healthcare, manufacturing, IoT, just to name a few. And I would say that with databases underpinning 85% of businesses, plus their desire to drive those increased levels of analytics, that combination of database-driven analytics seems to really be one of our sweet spots. I can share with you, if you like, a few real-world deployments, if you like. We could talk about Kuaishou, SoftBank, gPortals. Just let me know what you're interested in.
Tell me whatever you want there, Christy.
Okay, let me pull a few examples here. So Kuaishou is one of the cloud service providers that we've been working with that's doing video recommendation. I don't know if you've heard of TikTok.
Of course.
TikTok, every teenager in America is on this thing. And there's a lot of analytics behind the scenes for this, where there are algorithms watching your usage and your download patterns to recommend the next video for you to watch. That's very data intensive, but imagine the value to Kuaishou if they're able to immediately react to the consumer behavior and make the right recommendation to get the right set of eyeballs. So Kuaishou implemented persistent memory in their Redis database, which underpinned all of these activities. And they saw 30% lower TCO in their cost savings, and they were able to reduce their footprint in the data center. So super exciting. It's a win for everyone. So another example that we can talk about is an online gaming. I have a teenage son, and this is one that's near and dear to my heart. But we have a company called GPortal that worked with Dell, and they provide online gaming instances for Minecraft. And when they implemented persistent memory, they were able to balance core to memory ratio so that they could get more gaming instances online per server at higher performance with no visual glitches and things that you might expect. So they saw 2.78 more game instances per server. Once again, saved them a lot of money, and it raised the experience of those teenage gamers so that they still had a good visual experience.
That's really cool, Christy. Now, software optimization is also crucial in this area as well, right? Are you seeing that? And what kind of benefits are you seeing specifically here?
You know, I definitely see that. And you're hitting on a key point for this technology. You know, it's more than just a hardware DIMM. It does require, to get the most out of it, some level of software investment. You can use it without it, but to see those benefits, you need to. And I always think that software is the bridge between awesome hardware components and then solutions to real problems. So let's talk a little bit about what I mean when I say software optimization, because this product can be used in various ways. The architecture is such that it can be used transparently with no awareness of persistent memory. It's in a mode we call memory mode, and you still get the large capacity of the product, and you don't have to do any code optimization. But if you use an operating system or an application that is persistent memory aware, a few more of those features start to open up. So when it starts to get really interesting is when the application itself has been optimized to take advantage of persistence and application place data. And we call that app direct mode. Once your software is optimized, you can control which tier of memory or storage holds your critical data, and you can use the persistence for replication. You can replicate in memory or in storage. You can start to provide the data security services, and you start to see those 10x to 100x performance improvements that we talk about. Because the software implementation of persistent memory is so critical, Intel's approaching the market in a couple of ways. We're partnering with those key OS and hypervisor vendors and open source communities to ensure that products and services are persistent memory aware. And we also directly enable software application providers to optimize their software through our open source libraries, education, and access to pre-production hardware. We already have more than 40 applications across various markets and verticals that have done that optimization, and that grows every day. So if your favorite application isn't available yet, just stay tuned. And then finally, I think about how we provide that same level of education and resources to our up-and-coming developers and engineers. So any ISV, academia, any developer that wants to learn more, we have resources for that as well.
Very cool. All right, Christy, it is time for your off-the-cuff question now. Since you haven't been on my show yet, I'm going to give you my standard off-the-cuff. So if you could have one meal on planet Earth right now, it doesn't matter if the restaurant is closed, it's in another part of the world. If you could have one delicious meal right now, what would it be?
It has to be street tacos. I am in love with every aspect of street tacos, and I can, depending on the meat, the protein, all the toppings, it's all about the toppings. That would be my meal.
Very good. That sounds delicious. Well, Christy, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And yes, if LinkedIn is more your thing, I totally understand. You can follow me or us on LinkedIn as well. We also have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of super cool techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by, yeah, that'd be me. And you can also subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. By clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Fryin' page, you can check out the Fish Fry archives or subscribe to Fish Fry via Spotify, Podbean, or the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, or heck, you just want to chat, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com. And yes, I promise I will respond. Or you can also post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of Juneteenth, 2020, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.